Good morning. Any morning that starts like that has got to be a good one. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here this morning for a very special worship service that includes the music of the Parish Jazz Band. I'll say more about them and introduce the band members in just a moment. As always, coffee hour will follow our service in Fellowship Hall. You can find it by going out the door and down the hall and following signs. If you are a guest with us this morning, please know that we're very glad you're here and we hope you enjoy this very special service. There will be information about this congregation is available during coffee hour at the Church Life table in Fellowship Hall. So please stop by to learn a little more about us if you're new to First Parish. This morning, it is a fine and wonderful thing to have the Parish Jazz Band with us. There is information about the band included in your order of service, and I would like to introduce them to you at this time. Band members are Sarah Beauvais on vocals. Stand up. Paul Chastel on trombone. Brittany Granger on drums. John McNeil on saxophone. Mike McKendry on clarinet. Michael Palladini on guitar. Michael is also the musical director. And this morning, Scott Lilia is on bass. Scott is substituting for Quincy Sprague, who is ill this morning and won't be with us. So, Scott, thank you and welcome. So there will be music throughout the service. I hope you will enjoy it. Yes, Miles Davis can be appropriate for a Sunday morning worship setting. Honestly, I would like to ask you now to please take a moment and turn and greet your neighbors, say a word of welcome to being here this morning.
I took a trip on a train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding street. Moon we shining down some little town, and with each beat, same old dream. At every stop that we made, oh, I thought
thinks the point of being a singer is to get flowers.
These are the words of Sharon Welch. Jazz emerges from the interplay of structure and improvisation, collectivity and individuality, tradition and innovation. Jazz is not completely freeform. There are standards. The score, from that the players innovate and improvise. The pleasure and energy of jazz comes from hearing a familiar chord progression and melody and the new possibilities. What can be done from that structure? What does it take to improvise? Respect for the tradition, learning from it without merely repeating it, openness to learning something new from an old piece and other players. Players on the stand with no luggage and no maps and ready to go anywhere in the universe together on just sheer holy boldness.
Thank you.
The words of James Janiga. Jazz players trick themselves to paying attention in real time so that they're more loyal to the moment than to past routine. Trumpeter Miles Davis would count off the song If I Were a Bell, a song usually played in F, and just before the first note, he'd turn to tell the band to play it in D-flat, forcing them to concentrate on something that would otherwise be easy. Saxophonist Sonny Rollins got so frustrated with playing predictable patterns that he took years off to develop new ones. There's a natural temptation to repeat past success and get better and better at doing the wrong thing. It worked in the past, but something new is needed. You have to treat faith as a learning opportunity. On March 2, 1959, Miles Davis gathered the six musicians in his band at Columbia Records' 30th Street Studio in New York City. He gave them a bare-bones outline for the album they were about to record. They had not practiced. There had been and would be no rehearsals. Legend has it that in two recording sessions, there was one and only one take for each of five pieces. When they were done, saxophonist John Coltrane and Julian Cannonball Adderley, pianist Bill Evans and Wynton Kelly, bassist Paul Chambers, percussionist Jimmy Cobb, and Miles on trumpet had created what would become the most widely known jazz recording ever, Kind of Blue. Millions and millions of copies of Kind of Blue have sold all over the world. Now, more than half a century after it was made, it still sells and it is still studied, and the songs are still performed by musicians from different genres. It is, quite simply, a significant and remarkable feature of America's cultural landscape and of the world's music and of its art. Ashley Kahn, author of Kind of Blue, The Making of the Miles Davis Masterpiece, says the recording possesses an almost spiritual quality. The musicians, particularly Coltrane, seem to take a kind of reverent approach to it. In the Church of Jazz, she writes, Kind of Blue is one of the holy relics. I would ask you to listen as the Parish Jazz Band plays Blue in Green from this most holy relic. For Miles and his band, there had been no practice, no rehearsals, two sessions, and on the first take, five songs for Kind of Blue were done. By all accounts, Miles Davis was an extraordinary leader. musicians who played with him talked about how he taught them to listen, about how he could listen to what was going on around him musically, engage with it, incorporate it, and then make what everyone was playing even better. They spoke of his unique understanding of time and space and movement. Many said it was Miles who taught them what it meant to play from the heart. Some even spoke of him in Zen-like terms, how he pointed in a direction, spoke only a few words, and then helped each musician in his band find their own way to the place they needed to be. The year before Kind of Blue was recorded, Davis handed pianist Bill Evans a piece of paper. On it, Miles had written two things, the musical symbol for G minor and the musical symbol for A augmented. "See what you can do with this," Davis told Evans. "See what you can do with this." In creating Kind of Blue, Davis brought extraordinary gifts of leadership and musicianship to the studio. And he asked a lot of the guys in the band. Miles described it this way. "If you put a musician in a place where he has to do something different from what he does all the time, then he can do that. But he's got to think differently in order to do it. He has to use his imagination, be more creative, more innovative. He's got to take more risk. He's got to play above what he knows, far above it. And what that might lead to might take him above the place where he's been playing all along, to the new place where he finds himself right now, and to the next place he's going, and even above that. I've always told the musicians in my band to play what they know and then play above that, because then anything can happen. And that's where great art and great music happen." Yes. And as jazz great Art Blakey said, jazz is born by somebody goofing. Chances are, when you take a risk trying to get to that next place, to play above what you know, somebody is going to goof. Maybe it will be the result of lack of skill, failure of imagination, maybe a failure to listen carefully to others, or something else. Bill Evans, the pianist who got that piece of paper from Miles with G minor and A augmented written on it, who played on Kind of Blue, he must have had experience with this kind of thing. "In jazz," he said, "a mistake can be, in fact, must be justified by what follows it. And what follows need not be played by the one who made the mistake." There's a story, an apocryphal story, about a jazz artist who was asked where he came up with his ideas for such original improvisation. "They come," he said, "from having to do something with other musicians' mistakes." Taking her cues from the world of jazz, ethicist Sharon Welch makes a wager that Bill Evans is right. A mistake can be justified by what follows it. She wagers that things that affect our lives in positive ways, like innovation, creativity, power, beauty, responsiveness, things we can experience as healing, these things emerge as readily from our ability to respond to, work with, even engage playfully with each other's weaknesses and mistakes, with each other's goofs, as they do from our ability to build on each other's strengths and successes. A colleague once blessed me on my way in ministry with these words. These are the choices, she said, being safe and unimaginative and pretty much doing everything okay, or being passionate and taking risks and trying out new ideas and from time to time being embarrassed. We need, she said, to make more mistakes. Yes, but how many more mistakes? Once upon a time, I found an answer to that question. Years ago, I had the opportunity to work with Alice Mann, a well-known consultant in all things congregational. She was doing an assessment of programs for which I was responsible as the director for congregational services for our Unitarian Universalist Association. We were trying new things we'd not done before. We were doing a few tried before and very familiar things in new ways, and sometimes it simply felt overwhelming. At other times, it felt as if we only had a toe in the water when we should have been up to our necks in it. Either way, I was certain the time was right for that question, and I was curious, were we doing enough? Were we trying enough new things? Were there too many or too few? So I asked her, and after a few moments, Alice replied, "You ought to be trying about a dozen new things. That seems about right." She continued, "The thing is, you need to be trying enough new things so that you make some mistakes. Enough new things so that you outright fail at a few of them. Enough so you have the opportunity to learn from the mistakes and from the failures, as you also learn from those things that actually go right and that you do well." In the words of Art Blakey and Miles Davis, if we aren't goofing, we aren't spending enough time playing above what we know. No, I am not going to pull a list out of my robe pocket here and now, a list of 12 new things that you and I and we are going to try in the brief time we have remaining together. We will continue to welcome all who seek a vibrant spiritual home, and I will continue to work with the staff, the board, the Committee on Interim Ministry, and others to affirm so much that is good and strong here, even as we try on a few changes and make some adjustments. We'll continue to explore possibilities in the spirit of loving challenge and in the hope of transforming ourselves. We'll continue to live into and live out this congregation's commitment to courageously build a caring and just world. So no list. You're lucky, because I do have one. Another time. After your search committee has finished its work, after candidating week has come and gone, after I have said farewell, when your new minister is here among you, you will continue to play what you know, a a Unitarian Universalist faith that nourishes and challenges you as you search for truth and to make meaning for your life from the truth you find. As you support one another and work together so there will be more justice. And I wager that you'll also find that you are, as Miles put it, in a place where you have to do something different from what you do all the time. Like the musicians in Miles' band, you'll have to think differently. Draw on your imagination, be more creative, more innovative, take more risks. And as you do, I wager that you too will find yourself in that place where great things happen.
Thank you. So you see, I was terrible. It's so extreme.